This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, we're going to be talking about one of my favorite subjects, food, and about how crucial it is to have healthy food for our kids, especially in schools. And with me to talk about this is Ann Cooper, a former executive chef who's the co-author with Lisa Holmes of Bitter Harvest and Lunch Lessons, Changing the Way We Feed Our Children. She calls herself, and you might have heard this, the Renegade Lunch Lady. Ann Cooper, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thanks for having me here.
Did you give up being a chef, or how did you move from being a chef to being this advocate? And do you miss being a chef if you're not doing it now?
Well, you know, I'm such an unlikely person to be an advocate for kids and food. I never knew what kids ate. I was sort of a white tablecloth celebrity chef. Worst thing that could happen is Saturday night, hostess comes running in and goes, chef, there's a screaming child on table 19. What do I do? And I'd look at them and go, ask them to leave. Why are they in my restaurant, you know? But when I wrote Bitter Harvest, which is my second of four books, I started really understanding that food was killing our kids, killing us, people owned the food supply. It was crazy. So I started really thinking about it. And then in the late 90s, I got asked to become the executive chef of a school in New York, the Ross School. And I went, what, me, lunch lady? No way. And they said, come and see. And I went and I saw this school that integrated cooking and farming and learning and kids. And I went, wow, you know, I believe so strongly in a sustainable food system, in good food for everyone. Maybe I could make a difference. So in 1999, I dropped out of being an executive chef and started being a lunch lady. And I do a lot of cooking still, both personally and professionally. So I don't really miss that. And I certainly don't miss, now at 56 years old, being the person on the line with hands on pans and all of that. But I think the giving I can give now through food is really with kids and their education.
You don't miss having a chance at being on the Food Channel with one of those celebrity chefs?
Well, you know what? I've been on the Food Channel. I was one of those sort of celebrity chefs. But frankly, you know, I get more press, both good and bad, from being a lunch lady than I ever did from being a chef.
Well, let's talk about that, Ann Cooper. You said food's killing our kids. What do you mean by that?
You know, we now live in a country where 73% of us are overweight and obese, 73%. And in fact, Reuters today said that we're getting fatter and fatter and fatter. And so we need to really think about that. The CDC has said that of the children born in the year 2000, one out of every three Caucasians and two out of every three African Americans and Hispanics are going to have diabetes in their lifetime. This generation of children born in the year 2000 is going to be the first generation in our country's history that may die at a younger age than their parents from what we feed them. We are killing our kids with food.
You also say in your book, Lunch Lessons, that there may be a connection with ADHD, too, and with poor learning.
Absolutely. The research is pretty clear that not only chemicals in our food, but some of the high fructose corn syrup and some of the very high sugared kind of food and refined carbohydrate kind of food absolutely makes ADD and ADHD worse. And many of the ADD and ADHD kids can have that control through proper diet as opposed to drugs.
Part of this problem, though, is the result of the fast food industry. I mean, it's the triumph of the fast food industry in a way. There's a statistic in your book that said we're spending, as a nation, $3 billion on fast food in the early 70s, and now it's, or when you wrote the book in 2006, it was $110 billion. I mean, that's 30 times, almost 40 times as much in just a couple of decades. And there was one anecdote in the book I liked where you said Ray Kroc at McDonald's was pretty intentional about his locating his McDonald's near schools. I didn't know that. Tell that story.
Well, you know, Ray Kroc was just a businessman, and he felt like that kids, especially high school kids, would like this kind of fast food and would like to go outside of school when you had open campuses to this kind of socialization. But big business spends $20 billion a year marketing non-nutrient foods to kids. $20 billion. It's just crazy. And the USDA's 5-a-day, which is supposed to be 9-a-day now, but the 5-a-day program to get us to eat more fresh fruits and vegetables has 5 million. I mean, it's crazy. We have now grown a generation of children that thinks chicken nuggets is a food group and hot Cheetos is breakfast. In America, 1 out of every 4 meals is eaten in fast food. 1 out of every 4 meals is eaten in a car, moving car. And 1 out of every 4 meals in front of a blue screen, TV, Game Boy, computer, iPhone, iPod, whatever. We do not cherish food anymore, and we have to get back to that.
Speaking with Ann Cooper, the renegade lunch lady, who is the author of several books, including Bitter Harvest and Lunch Lessons, Changing the Way We Feed Our Children. A life and death issue, truly. Talk about the origins of the school lunch program. I saw in your book that at the end of World War II, one, I believe it was a military guy in government, said that malnutrition was a national security risk.
The National School Lunch Program is approximately 65 years old. And part of the reason it came into being is there were not enough male recruits, because at that time it was only male recruits, that were fit enough to be in the military for the Second World War. And so they decided that because there were so many malnourished recruits that couldn't, you know, we were too malnourished to fight, that the government had to take on school lunch programs in order to have kids that could grow into soldiers. Very recently, we hear that we are now too fat to fight, and the Army and a bunch of retired generals are now going after the National School Lunch Program as a way to get us to be more fit so we can fight. So it's an interesting 65 years.
Part of the initial program that Harry Truman started was not only to give kids nutrition in the schools, but to serve agribusiness. And maybe that's the problem from birth, that there's this conflict between serving corporate agriculture and making our kids healthy.
I actually believe that's absolutely right. I think that the National School Lunch Program was super well-intentioned. And I even think when it first came under the USDA that it really did make sense. But what happens is the USDA's real meaning, the real being, is all about being the marketing arm for big agriculture. And big agriculture isn't the person growing your tomatoes down the street. It's Monsanto and DuPont and these big mega corporations. And what happens through the Commodity Food Program, which is actually part of the Farm Bill, not the Child Nutrition Act, is that excess food is bought up and pushed into schools. Now, this excess food is often things we shouldn't eat very much of. It's oftentimes a lot of animal protein. It's a lot of highly processed foods. It's a lot of corn and soy. So we're putting sugar and fat into our kids' plates. And what the result is highly processed foods on our kids' plates. So there's so much conflict of interest. The National School Lunch Program, the National Organic Standards Act, and Monsanto and DuPont are all overseen by the USDA. It's just not working.
And you say that the schools aren't even meeting those minimum USDA guidelines. Something like 78% of the schools aren't even meeting that. That was an astonishing figure.
At least two-thirds. At least two-thirds of all schools in America are not meeting the guidelines. And the guidelines are so low that chicken nuggets, tater tots, chocolate milks, popsicles, Pop-Tarts, and corn dogs are all allowed. So not meeting guidelines that allows that crap into our schools is sort of an overwhelming thought.
I'm speaking with Ann Cooper, the renegade lunch lady, author of, among other things, Bitter Harvest and Lunch Lessons. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine. You're listening to Progressive Radio. Let's get to the nub of a couple of the issues related to school lunches. One is the assumption that kids are eating what kids want to eat, as if that's something frozen in time or given from nature. You write in your book, there's this misguided notion that kids actually prefer to eat frozen, processed, fried, and sugary foods. How are you sure that's a misguided notion?
Well, I'm not even sure whether it matters whether it's a misguided notion or not. I mean, if your 12-year-old comes home and says, you know, I'm only going to drink scotch now, or, you know, I've decided that I'm going to have unprotected sex for the next 78 hours straight, or I've decided that, you know, I'm only going to, you know, do cocaine now. I mean, we do not in America let our children do whatever they want. You know, if your child at 12 comes home and says, I'm not going to learn English or Spanish, or I'm not going to learn math or science, you don't say, cool, dude, you don't have to go to school anymore. You say, you know what? That's not okay. And we are going to work together, figure out how to get you through your educational process. It's no different here. Why would we allow our kids to make these decisions? We don't allow them to not to wear seatbelts. We don't allow them to do a lot of things because we are the parents. We are the caregivers. We are responsible. They are children. So, you know, we have to take the high road and educate them. Who decided they should decide? You know, what is that?
What advice do you have for parents for feeding their kids at home?
I think that when parents feed their kids at home, they have to stop being short order cooks. I mean, when we were kids, there wasn't like you couldn't have anything you wanted. This was dinner, you ate it, you didn't, okay. You know, the idea that, you know, parents will make anything their kids want and, oh, honey, sweetheart, you don't like that or this or, you know, I mean, come on, you know, these are children. Yes, we want to give them choices. Yes, we want to educate them. And I got to tell you that I travel all around the world on a really regular basis, and this idea that there is kids' foods is only an American concept.
I saw that even this question of spicy food is an American concept, that you can't feed your young kids spicy food, that somehow American kids or Anglo kids are going to, you know, break out in a rash or something.
Right. And I spend a lot of time in South and Central America, and believe me, they might tone it down a little bit, but you know, and even in our schools, you know, we'll put the hot sauce on the side and let the kids choose how much or what kind they want. But we need kids to learn what food really tastes like. The only people that think kids will only eat fried food are the ones making money off the fried food, for goodness sake.
And who's making money off the fried food?
Well, you know, certainly all the fast food industry. But listen, when chicken nuggets and tater tots or chicken nuggets and french fries is the number one served school meal in America, I mean, Tyson's making money, you know, the French fry or Nida or Ryder or whatever, the French fry companies are making money. I mean, there's a lot of people making money on keeping this bad food in our system. And I'm not saying as a parent you should never feed your kids a chicken nugget or a French fry, but make it a treat. That's the problem. We've taken food that we might think of as a treat and made it everyday food. Now, I love treats. Champagne, foie gras, caviar, yay. I might have it once or twice a month, I mean, once a month or once every other month. If we started treating some of these foods, fast foods, highly processed foods, as a treat, then, you know, we would solve this problem.
But you say in your book you shouldn't use food as a reward either. You talk about the M&M rewards.
Absolutely. Food should not be a reward or a punishment. I think that that's a little bit different than a treat. And maybe I should say celebratory food. I think that we should have everyday food and celebratory food. In fact, my good friend Rick Bayless from Chicago talks about that a lot. Is it part of the problem in America why we're so fat is we've taken what might before have been celebratory food and made it everyday food. But yes, we shouldn't be rewarding or punishing children with food. They should learn to cherish it. They should learn it that it's part of their lives.
Now, the school lunch program is a political program. This is something that the government funds and that the school districts regulate. And this is a way for people to engage in the political process, but also have a direct input on what their kids are eating. What they're bumping into, in addition to this question, you know, do kids really want their fried French fries and tater tots, especially in this time of budget crisis, is, you know, we don't have enough money for this organic food or for this fresh food or for this locally grown food. This is the cheapest way to feed mass numbers of kids, and there's no other way to do it cheaply, so we've got to do it this way. How do you respond to that?
Well, it's very, very that's a very, very disingenuous kind of statement and idea. First of all, there's price and there's cost. So the price may be less, actually, and I would refute this, but people will say the price is less to serve chicken nuggets than roast chicken. I wouldn't agree with that, but that's what people will say. But what's the real cost? You know, in America, we spend $9.5 billion a year on the National School Lunch Program, feeding 5.4 billion lunches a year. And that's $9.4 billion for an entire 10-month school year. We are spending $3 billion a week on the war and $5 billion a week just between two diseases, diabetes and obesity. So it is not that we do not have the money. It is that we're not choosing to spend it in a way that's going to keep our children healthy. So the price might be less, but the cost is exorbitantly more. But I would actually say that by and large, most school districts could make positive change at least in some incremental way, without more money. That being said, the government absolutely has to allocate more money to this. I mean, the current reimbursement rate that the government gives lunch ladies like myself to feed a kid is $2.72. And that $2.72 has to cover everything from payroll to benefits to food to, you know, cafeteria tables and gas for the trucks. I mean, it's a ridiculously low amount of money. And in most school districts, two-thirds of that $2.72 goes to payroll and overhead. It leaves less than a dollar in most school districts, 85 to 90 cents, to be spent on actually the cost of the meal. And how can we think so little of our children that we will go into the local coffee place, many of us all across the country, and spend three or four times more for our daily coffee than we're spending on our children's lunch?
Under a dollar for the meal.
Under a dollar. LA spends 56 cents, but it's under a dollar in most school districts.
Speaking with Ann Cooper, she calls herself the Renegade Lunch Lady. She's the author of a couple books, several books, including Bitter Harvest and Lunch Lessons, Changing the Way We Feed Our Children. And you're head of nutrition in the Boulder schools, is that right?
I am. I'm the director of nutrition services for Boulder Valley School District, where we have 48 schools, 30,000 kids.
How's that going?
It's going really well. I'm in the beginning of my second year. It is a painful process to change an entire school district. When I got to Boulder, it was typically bad food, the same as when I got to Berkeley, where I'm the former director. And when you're feeding kids basically a diet of, you know, chicken nuggets and corn dogs and, you know, breakfast for lunch and all this stuff, it is painful to change. It takes a lot of education at every single level, whether it's the community, the parents, the kids, the teachers, the food service workers. There's this continuum of education, and it takes time. These changes don't happen overnight. It's a process, and you have to be willing to go through the process. So it's still pretty painful. My staff is really, really great. Everybody's working really, really hard. Participation is up, but only a small amount. We need it to be up more, and we're working on that.
But you're also facing resistance, Ann Cooper. I heard right before we started this interview that you've even gotten some death threats in this job. I didn't think that was a job that usually occasioned death threats. What's that about?
You know, some people feel really strongly about that it should be absolutely their decision what their kids eat, and that, you know, schools, some people don't even believe schools should be feeding kids. Some people feel like that's socialist. Some people feel like, you know, schools shouldn't dictate. So there's a lot of people out there, and, you know, I certainly have a tremendous amount of support in the Boulder Valley School District, but not near 100%, that's for sure. However, I think that, again, these things take time, and over time we can make really great change, not only in communities like Berkeley and Boulder and Madison, but in school districts all across the country. We can make change for kids.
Not to belabor it, but did you feel like you really needed to report those threats, or were they idle threats?
Nah, you know, it's just people. I think email has made people think they're anonymous. And what's really interesting is almost no email is really anonymous. And every time I get a really sort of scathing email with some anonymous email address, I check it out, and then I find them and I email them personally, and I never hear back.
How do you respond to the people who say that we don't need school lunches, that's socialism?
I would say then, do you feel like we don't need education in America? Do we, you know, the whole idea about education in America is that that across the board, public education is about leveling the playing field, that every child in America can be the best they can be, that America can be the best they can be. And part of that is educating kids about food. I mean, all the math and English and science in the world is nothing if these kids are losing digits, fingers and toes at 18, 19, 20 because they have diabetes. I mean, kids are going to eat for the rest of their lives. Most of them are not going to use trig for the rest of their lives. And to say that it's not as important to teach them about food and wellness as any other academic pursuit, I think, is really being short-sighted.
I'm speaking with Ann Cooper, the Renegade Lunch Lady. I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. Each school district has a wellness policy requirement. I didn't know about that. Why don't you explain what that is and how people can use it, parents can use it?
As of September 2006, every school district in America, this is on a district-wide basis, has to have a wellness policy in place. This was mandated by the USDA. I will say that there were actual mandates around how the wellness policies should be written and committees that should be had. But now, 4 or 5 years later, what we're seeing is most of those wellness policies are collecting dust on some administrator's shelf. So as a parent looking to change school food, first of all, you only change it at the district level. It's almost impossible to make sustainable systemic change at a school level. So from a district level, you need to look at those wellness policies. You need to read them. Then go to your child's school and eat the food. Then get a whole bunch of parents to do the same thing. And then go to the school board, petition the school board to have an open meeting on school food. Bring pictures or actual food that's being served in the schools, because most school board members don't know what the kids are eating on a regular basis. Get parents together, look at the wellness policy, and be able to say, this is the policy. Now, maybe it's good enough, maybe it's not. Maybe it needs to be reevaluated. But most of them actually have some good things in them, and the food doesn't look anything like the wellness policy. So they really are a tool towards change.
And perhaps what needs to be done if the wellness policy is still gathering dust is for people to challenge members of the school board.
Oh, absolutely. I think that one of the things in reauthorization, which actually may happen in the near future, is that they're saying that the wellness policies need to be updated, because there was nothing in the original law that said they needed to be updated on a specific timeline. And I think if they're represented to the school boards and updated on a yearly basis, that would be really helpful.
Can you give an example of a school district other than Boulder, which you're involved in, that has done wonders?
Well, certainly Berkeley, where I'm the former nutrition services director, and there's an evaluation came out on the Berkeley project that really showcased how good these programs can be. I think that there's lots of positive change happening in numerous places. I think we're seeing some positive change coming out of Chicago. I think St. Paul has done a really great job of starting to see some change. I think there are a lot of districts, Santa Barbara, people are really trying to make change. And I think, again, some of it's incremental, but we're walking in the right direction.
You've talked a lot about lunch programs. What kind of breakfast programs are there in schools?
Well, the breakfast program I believe that every school in America should have is universal breakfast. I believe that every single child should be given breakfast every day, and the best way to implement that is in the classroom. The USDA actually has a significant amount of money to give schools to do breakfast, and I think, as probably all of our mothers thought, that breakfast really is the most important meal of the day. And if we want kids to be able to think and behave and excel, they need a good, healthy breakfast every day.
And so how do you get schools to start giving breakfast, too, along with lunches?
Well, I think it's really just a matter of discussing it with the superintendent and the school board. Every school district we work with actually puts in breakfast because it is really, really important. And one of the things around breakfast that's really interesting, because the reimbursement rate is a percentage of the food cost is much higher than it is on lunch, it can actually be cash positive. So if you put in, depending on your free and reduced percentage, if you put in universal breakfast, you actually can take a little of the excess money and it can actually help fund lunch.
I'm speaking with Ann Cooper, the Renegade Lunch Lady, author of, among other things, Bitter Harvest and Lunch Lessons, Changing the Way We Feed Our Children. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine. You're listening to Progressive Radio. Outside of focusing on the school districts, which is really where the public fight is, you have a lot of recommendations. You have a lot of recipes, but a lot of recommendations for parents at home to give their children an appreciation of good food and where good food comes from. What are some of those?
You know, as a parent, there's a lot of things you can do. And I don't say this tongue in cheek because we're on the radio, but turn off the TV is the first recommendation I have to parents. You know, I spoke about this $20 billion a year spent on marketing non-nutrient foods to kids. It results in 40,000 commercials a year that kids see for junk food. So turn off the TV and then shop with your kid. Take them to the farmer's market, let them buy things, cook with your kids, grow something with your kids, even if it's just a little pea in a window box. But you have to make food central to your life's experience and your child's life's experience. Sit down at a table and eat it with your kids. Maybe not every night, but at least sometimes. Stop feeding your kids food while you're driving around in the car. The car is not a dinner table. You know, it's really these little things that I think can make such a difference. When we make food important and part of our family and life experience, then we'll be able to really educate our kids around it.
Ann Cooper, there are these so-called food deserts, especially in poor areas in this country. My wife's a Head Start nurse here in Madison, and in the area where she works or where the headquarters are. You know, people cannot go to a decent market, and they're going to, you know, there's the convenience store and there's Burger King, and everything else is hard to get to. What's the solution to those kind of desert issues?
You know, that's a very, very complicated problem. We see this a lot in urban environments. I worked in Harlem for a while, and there were no grocery stores, but tens of dozens of liquor stores and bodegas, you know. So we do see this. I think that this is something that the government has to help with, I think both on the state and national level, where we really work hard to bring, you know, real food, good food into all areas in the country. You know, good food in America should not be a class issue. Every child, it should be a birthright in America that every child is served healthy food.
Well, what about this class issue, Ann Cooper? Because I think some people may say, well, that's just, you know, these are the affluent liberal parents who want this homegrown organic food, and they're just not being realistic, and there are all these other people, they just need food, period.
You know, research has shown us very recently that not only the achievement gap in school, but the life expectancy gap between rich and poor in our country has grown 20% in 20 years. Just think about that. If you're affluent in America versus poor, your life expectancy is 20% longer. You know what? If that's a class issue, we should have a class war. You know what? That just wants to make me cry. I mean, think about that. You know, these kids that are born into poor environments, it's not their fault. There's no fault here. And if in America, in the richest country in the world, if a child, if it's not a birthright, that children should have real food, healthy food, I don't know. Then, you know, I don't know what our country is anymore.
No, yeah, sometimes I don't either. Ann Cooper, Michelle Obama's been bringing some of these issues to the fore. What do you make of the work she's trying to do?
You know, I applaud Michelle's Let's Move campaign. Michelle, you know, to have a first lady who has brought the issue of unhealthy school food to the public, I think is just so great. However, there's a big but with this, and the big but is that there's no policy and there's no funding behind Let's Move. So she's, you know, the cheerleader for the country around these issues, but it's all in our democratic society. It's our vote. It's our senators and representatives that really make a difference. They're the ones who vote child nutrition reauthorization. They're the ones who vote the farm bill. They're the ones who get to decide. So in essence, we decide. So we have to take the political process in our democratic society and take what our cheerleader's telling us to heart and make something different happen.
You also talk about, you know, there's voting every time you shop. That's kind of a vote.
Absolutely. You know, we vote with our fork and we vote at the grocery store. If we choose to eat fast food from McDonald's or Burger King or Kentucky Fried every single meal, we are voting for that type of food system. Conversely, if we vote to eat regional food, farm fresh food, local food, even just real food, we're making a very different kind of statement. And I think that the statement that we have to make in America is that we do want real food, and that's important to us.
Well, we're going to have to end it there. Ann Cooper's been my guest today. You can find out more about her simply at chefann.com. Ann Cooper is the author of, among other things, Bitter Harvest and Lunch Lessons, Changing the Way We Feed Our Children. Ann Cooper, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.